I would like to actually challenge that assertion. I don't think the bad guys didn't win. In actual fact, I think the bad guys, if you want to characterize them as that, lost. We have got an institution in Stormont that's up and active and running and doing some of the business. We've got peace on our streets in the sense that there are no bombs going off. We've got actually less crime than you will get in the middle of Manchester or Liverpool or Birmingham. We have got cohesion in our communities that is better than you'll get in London. So although things are far from perfect, I think actually this is a win situation. Now, I could say it's a win situation for the unionists, but I think that that's an unhelpful thing to say. But I think that actually the bad guys lost. And people are up now in Stormont talking. So that's the first thing. Second thing is, I think that to characterise loyalists as whinging, I think there's an element of truth in that, but again, in another sense, that's wrong. But I think that there are genuine grievances within working class Protestant communities. I think whenever we look at the benefits from the past 15 years, the people who have benefited at least are the working class communities. Now, Pete Sherlow, professor from Queen's, will tell you there's not that much difference between the nationalist working class communities and the unionist working class communities. But the fact of the matter is, in terms of education, the unionist communities are doing worst. There are major problems there. And I think that's why they're whinging. And the other thing I would say is they're whinging because they have been treated like scumbags. In terms of...
By whom?
By the media. So for example, the bands. The bands are treated as a bunch of criminal hoods. Yet... And while there are issues with the bands, what the bands do is they give young men a sense of something to belong to, a structure, a discipline, involvement in the community, an opportunity to get out, to get well-dressed and to parade. And that, I think, is a very positive contribution to a community that has not got a lot to celebrate. Those young men don't have a lot to be proud of or to boast of. Their lives are pretty grim in many cases, and this gives them something constructive. So I think that they are wrongly...
Would you accept to a certain extent some of them are their own worst enemies?
Exactly. And as has been said before, the young men who prayed outside St. Patrick's Church, they should have apologised straight away and said, okay, that was wrong. Now, they did apologise. 3 days later, they apologised. Did that feature in the news, the media?
Well, of course
hardly
it did.
Hardly anything.
Of course it did. They also said, oh, we didn't know it was a church. Oh, please.
Well, some of them did, but there was a fulsome apology that came from them. So I mean, I'm not saying that they're perfect, but I'm saying that they're not as bad as people make them.
Can I just ask a straw poll? Just raise your hands if you think, or if what concerns you... Yeah, please. If what concerns you most at the moment in the life of the Protestant community is the problems over parading. I'll come to that. Absolutely. But let me get that question answered. Who thinks the biggest problem is parading? I think I saw it. 1, 2, 3, 4 hands up. 5 hands up. Okay, so... And the
Yes.
Right, okay. But we've already had a few suggestions there. Unemployment, I mean, in this part of the city alone, we heard but the appalling figures of suicides, for example, in recent weeks. And that all goes back to what, I guess, what everyone would agree is economic crisis. Michael, you know, I do remember... BBC Newsline going to interview someone, a group of kids who had just lost one of their friends to suicide. And the reporter asked the question, you know, why do you think he did it? And the answer, which, you know, in some ways seemed almost ridiculous, but also was deeply, deeply sad, was there's nothing else to do around here. You know, I mean, is that how widespread is that sense of hopelessness and purposelessness in this part of the city, or indeed any other working class area?
I lost during the first time I was in MLA 4 people to suicide, and each one of them had seen 32 hours before. And every time it happens, you go home and you say, was there a sign? Did they say something that you missed? Were you dismissive? Were you under pressure? Did you not have time to devote to them? And the truth is, in all of those cases, not a single thing they said indicated to me that that was in their mind. My daughter's 26. She knew 4 of the 7 who took their lives inside the last period of time. One of them was actually a relation of my son-in-law's. There is a generation of kids. Now, it's mostly, most of my experience would be with young females because that gives rise to housing and the babies and things. And they have absolutely they've had no preparation for the real world as it is. Sometimes they come from homes where parents work, and sometimes they come home from generational unemployment. They've managed to get through school, many of them, without the ability to read and write to any real purpose. And this is from a district that once provided the best engineers in the world, where going to school was an ethos and passing exams or trying to pass exams was good. And they're not bad children. But many of them are children or young adults who do bad things, and they become intoxicated with brand names. They become intoxicated with the need for drink and, in many cases, drugs that are endemic. Something has attacked their soul because it's all for immediate gratification. There's nothing that says, where am I going to be in 2 years or where am I going to be in 5 years? And in many cases, you can go through. I have one particular case where about a week after I was elected the first time, a mother brought a lassie to see me, and the lassie wasn't behaving well at school. And if I knew then what I know now, she would never have got down the path of being sent from school to some training organisation to being 20 years old and capable of reading and writing.
Right.
And I don't know what the answer is, apart from somebody giving them something that equates to work. John actually met the girl I'm talking about,
yeah.
And his settled view was what she needed was a job.
All right. So, Sammy, where does this sense of pointlessness come from, and how do you fix it, is the big question everyone wants answered.
I agree with Michael. I don't think there's a simple answer to this. I've had 3 members of my own family, immediate family, that have taken their own lives. And I don't mean that just to say it glibly. I think one of the most important things is that we talk about it. At the same time, we need to watch, don't hype it up, because there are a lot of vulnerable young people out there. And I just know some of the people that I have known over this past while they've taken their own lives haven't been young people. People in their 40s and their 50s as well, so it's not just young people. So for me, there's a whole range of reasons why young people. I think, certainly in East Belfast, one of the biggest problems that we have, mental health issues, and we're trying to get support for that. That's just one aspect of someone.
But does a mental health issue come from the sense of pointlessness and uselessness and no vision of a future for yourself? Is that where that comes from? At whatever age?
Yeah. Well, yeah, I think that's part of it. And we'll probably go on this later on. Mm. But certainly with the whole welfare reforms, with the whole changes that are taking place, we're talking to some people earlier on, some really difficult stuff come down the line in terms of changes and benefits that for so many vulnerable people. And I just fear for the future at this point in time. I think the other thing is that today I had Evan puts out the Tully Carnets and Billy Bean. They'd already been in East Belfast. And we talked about those issues. And it's not just a matter of throwing money at this situation. It's about trying to do something that's coordinated. I know when my brother took his own life early on in the year, it was Alfie McCrory, I think he was here. Alfie was a great help because he's been through it himself. He rang me up and we talked about it. Because I didn't know who to speak to. I ended up going over to Falls Road and getting leaflets, not just for me, but for my 2 nephews who found my brother and all that stuff. So I don't want to get into that. But what I'm saying is that when this is a taboo subject, still a taboo subject in many families. We need to be addressing it and dealing with it. But there needs to be some sort of coordination to this in East Belfast.
Jackie, a lot of energy goes into things like, who's that phone? You get sent out. Happens to anything to mine? I don't have one. You know, there's so much energy gets poured into the what we might broadly call the sectarian issues. And should that energy not be better channeled? Would it not be better channeled into, you know, social and economic issues? And you know, the loyalist people don't have a political voice. Sammy would say he is it. But we know that, you know, the PUP and the UDP, they failed to win any substantial political support. So is that part of what leaves loyalists feeling that they have no, that they are alienated from the political process?
Well, I think there's an insecurity, you know, and an apprehension among loyalism, where it's the old cliche, you know, the other side has got everything. Personally, I don't believe that. I believe the good guys win, and I think we are the good guys, you know. And,
God save us all.
Well, we are. Well, I'm talking about us, no, I'm even including you in that.
All right, okay.
Yeah, but I have some young lads from Tacoma here with me tonight. And they're good kids. And I just brought them here. I wasn't sure what format it was going to take, but I wanted them to come and see what life is outside Tacoma. I keep saying our young people are our future. But then we demonize them. And we treat them all as if they're some sort of nuisance. So how are they going to be the future? You're actually saying you can't be the future. So we're going to have to spend more time and effort and build some infrastructure around our young people. Or they
and is that
can't
largely
be in the
about
future.
Employment? Is it largely about
work? The way I look at it is, and there's integrated schools now. Not everybody agrees with integrated schools. Malone College is the nearest to us. 15 years ago, I think it was 57 pupils there, and it was a porta cabin. Now there's 900 pupils going to it, and it's a purpose-built school. And talking to the local people in Sandy Row and Tacoma, the parents don't necessarily want to send their kids there. They've nowhere else to send them. But they're going there, and they're exchanging text messages.
Why would they not want to send their kids there?
Well, because of the sectarian divide.
Because they don't want them to mix.
And part of the reason for that is it's the insecurity within our young people. They have problems sometimes interacting with each other. And with the inferiority complex they have sometimes, they don't want to interact with the other community. Or even if they did, they're afraid that they can't do it properly. So there's this... The youth are the future. If we can provide them with the social skills and the education, what I was going to say about the schools is that's all very well. There's 900 people going to Malone College now. But when they leave at 16, that's the end of whatever friendships or whatever relationships they would have built up over the 5 years of that school. Once the school finishes, instead of having a workplace to go into to keep that friendship going, and that would be part of the extended peace process, there's nothing for them. They just fall off the end of the table and they go back into their own areas. And whatever, like I said, whatever friendship they had developed is gone. Mm. That needs to be developed and encouraged. Mm. There needs to be apprenticeships. There needs to be some sort of jobs for them to make them feel as if they have a contribution to make their future. Mm.
John, education has always been a problem. I mean, Bob, can't even remember his name now. Gone. Bob, the lawyer, barrister. Bob McCartney, how could I forget? Senior moment. Bob McCartney, I mean, he used to say, you know, he always said that, you know, like, if on the Shankill Road there was lucky to be one kid who passed the 11 plus. Now, so it's not a new problem, but we find today the underachievement of Protestant children at GCSE level is extraordinarily marked as opposed to the Catholic side. Now, is that, to what extent is that an element of education being seen in the Catholic and the national side as being more important than it is in the Protestant side?
Well, I think this is hugely important, actually, for the loyalist communities. And, I mean, Dawn Purvis's report made the point that 80% of the determinants of academic success lie outside the classroom. Okay, so a huge amount depends upon what goes on at home and in the neighbourhood. And I think part of our problem is that many of our parents were told when they were at school that they were rubbish. And therefore, they think they're rubbish. They don't expect anything better from their kids. And there's no expectation
or incentive. And who was telling them this?
Well, our educational system produced that result.
Okay.
In my time, 25%, I think, went to grammar school, something like that. Now, it's changed now. But that's what my generation, you know, grew up thinking. And yet, the kids who are my patients so many of them have got a real spark of life about them. And they need to believe that they can actually be a success in life. Now, of course, it depends how you define success, but they can be a success in life. And they need to be given that confidence. And we need to tell the parents, for goodness sake, actually, you're a good parent. You're not rubbish. There's a whole lot that you can do and give to your kid, a huge amount that you can give to your kid, and that nobody else can give to them. So there has to be a culture change. Could I also say then, we are also stuck in that we've got some brilliant schools in Northern Ireland, but the majority of them are grammar schools. Now, we have got a couple of brilliant schools in East Belfast, Ashfield Girls and Ashfield Boys, outstanding. And any parent whose kid goes there, almost every parent will tell you the same. But, well, yes, that makes my point, that instead of having two good schools, we need five or six good schools in East Belfast, and we also need to look at this whole concept of you're a success or you're a failure by the time you're 11.
Michael, I just want to ask, is there a historical element to this? You know, you hear some commentators saying it used to be that every young Protestant got a job because you went into the yard or wherever you went. I mean, it's, you know, we're talking maybe 30, 40 years ago now. But is that why there appears to be less emphasis on the importance of education in the Protestant community?
I think for sure the certainty of employment did play a part in that. Just to speak a wee bit of what Jackie said in support of it, I'm the worst person in the world to ask about education. I went to Lisnashara Primary School and Lisnashara Secondary School, and it was suggested to my father when I was 15 that I should leave school because I'd ridden a motorbike up the stairs. Having said that, my wife, as you know, was a police officer, and during that duty she was seriously injured. And we started a family, and our son Matthew was unfortunate enough to be born just before Sonia was diagnosed with cancer. So his early years in life were spent radiotherapy, a whole lot of stuff. Mm. And he didn't get the help at home that he should have got. And Sonia decided, having come from the background that she did, she wanted him to be educated at Lagan College. We were told when Matthew was 9 at primary school he would never be able to read and write, he was so far behind. So consequently, he didn't do the transfer procedure. He went to Lagan College. In Lagan College, he went in form F, which is pretty close to the, in fact, is the bottom, and came out with the second highest A-level marks in Northern Ireland, got a degree in psychology, and in September was accepted to the School of Medicine because he believed in himself and the pupils and the staff believed in him. Personally, and people may take issue with this, I would not have religion anywhere near about schools. That's the truth. I think a child's entire future, I was maybe slightly different in that we had a business and it was always going to be a place for me, but I did manage to get into the army and get commissioned, which wasn't bad for somebody who got chucked out of school at 15. It's the belief in the staff. Mr. Andy McMoran believed in his pupils.
What about belief in the? What about belief coming from the parents as well, though? I mean,
look, it comes back to there was a time when elderly people were looked after by their families. There was a time when families looked after each other. There was a time when streets had 5 or 6 or 7 houses occupied by members of the same family. Then the state comes in and the state takes it over, and it shoves old people, elderly people, into accommodation. It's easier to sedate them. And then the state finds it can't afford it and then throws them back out into society when the actual trick of looking after them is gone. The extended family, I don't believe, exists anymore. And a big part of that, I think, was redevelopment, because redevelopment that was done was something that was done to Protestant communities as opposed to by them or for them. Mm. They knocked down hundreds of houses where people were happy living. They might not have been good houses, but the social structure in the Protestant communities did not exist after that had been done in the way in which it does.
But it was done in their best interest because the housing was pretty crap.
Well, I think you should always ask the community what it thinks is its best interest instead of getting an architect.
I just ask. I mean, there must be lots of questions on the floor here. I'd be interested if anyone would like to yes, gentlemen there in 3 rows back from you, Tanya, with the glasses on.
Just a bit of a problem with education. We're also talking about the be at the kind of parades and that part of our culture. And you ask
people. Just because people behind you may not be able to hear you, let me ask you to take the microphone, please. Thanks.
Can you hear me now?
Yeah.
People were being preoccupied with the culture. And only yesterday we seen the education minister through a Freedom of Information Act not going against our culture at contentious, what they call contentious areas, but at Four Arches in Portadown in Protestant estates. He was working under the table with Gemma McKenna, who's a Sinn Féin councillor for that area, to remove arches out of Protestant estates. Now, he's the education minister. You would think that he'd have better things to do than trying to agitate. And I would just like to bring you to a statement, which is in page 10 of the wee magazine that everybody got, about the IRA needs to be humiliated and they need to wear their sackcloth and ashes, not in a back room, but openly. And we have no apology for the stand we are taking. That's how I feel at the minute as a unionist, as a working class unionist. Remove the words IRA and put unionism in there. And that's what's happening right from the top. People like Declan Kearney and the Declan Kearney Initiative will tell us, oh, we want reconciliation, we want this. It's not working on the streets of Belfast and other towns. We're being hammered into the ground.
All right, let me take a couple more comments there. There were a couple of other hands up. Stick them back up again. Oh, you decided to put them down. There.
The question was, the good guys won, the bad guys won. Actually, women didn't win. If you look at your panel, if it hadn't been for the dramatists, your local writers here tonight, we wouldn't have seen any women up there. So thank you for all the people who wrote for women. Thank you. But no thanks to the politicians.
Right. Okay. Well, that's a fair point. Any other hands up? Yes, this gentleman.
Somebody did say that bad boys won. To quote yourself in your answer, you stated at the time, yes, but how does people assert itself, or rather reassert itself? So just how does a people define itself? What mechanics or mechanisms are needed to enable them so to do? And I put it to you that people like you and the media have a considerable big role. In my lifetime, who it is that I am, the media don't recognise me. They don't understand me or want to know who it is that I am. When I was a child growing up, I played a game called football. But my children are told today, according to the BBC every Friday night, they play a game called soccer. My neighbours played a game called Gaelic. But today the BBC tells me that game's football. Every Friday night prior to Rugby International, the BBC goes mad. And all roads lead tomorrow evening to Dublin. And now, in order to find out what the weather forecast is like, we'll go over to Cecilia. In Kilkeel, where I come from, I invited Lord Laird down one day. Ireland was playing Scotland. Our family owns a bar, took him into it. Place is decked in blue. And the flags that was on the wall, the Scottish flag.
Identity. I want to hear what you want to say. If you hold the microphone a little further away from you, we'll hear you better.
I'll do that.
Yeah, thanks.
I don't think I need a microphone.
Right.
Now, the point I mentioned, when it comes to our bands and our programmes, Stephen Nolan is a very capable broadcaster. He takes on a young fellow who's incapable of explaining his position. Does the BBC want to demonstrate the best of our bands, the Pride of Ballyran, the Mourne Young Defenders, Don Loy? Do they want to do a 6-week in-depth fly on the wall documentary about any of our bands that goes into our schools on a Friday and teach? No, but they'll go down to Silverbridge and they'll do a 6 weeks flying the wall documentary about Roman Catholic culture. Who it is that they are and who it is that we are. The BBC don't recognise us. They'll give us 45 minutes of a programme that gets the biggest audience on an annual basis, the 12th of July. Will they go down and follow the Armagh parade, which is the biggest one in Ulster? Well, and then they're sitting in the traffic coming out of Scarborough. 90,000 people have been to an event, and you listen. Now we've come to the traffic here today, and on comes the BBC traffic lady, and she tells us all, don't be going up to Glenarm today, because there's quite a lot of traffic there. There's a big event going on. 5,500 people have been up at some little event in Glenarm. but 90,000 people trying to make their way home from Scarborough. Have they ever seen an ounce of what is the cultural activity
all right.
of Protestant culture?
You, no, what? What?
That's what you're part of.
No,
it's
you.
It's
right. Would you allow me to? All right, ladies and gentlemen, sir, I want you to address this through the chair, and we'll get everyone a chance. What I just need to say to you is I'm not here representing the BBC. I'm not about to start defending or attacking it, so thank you for your contribution. This is not what this is about, but I take your point. Yes, sir, gentleman in the corner there.